and welcome to Best Girl Grip, the podcast that celebrates the women behind the scenes of the British film industry. I'm your host, Nicole Davis.
Hello, pod pals. This week, there are a few things in cinemas around the UK involving previous guests. Only You, the directorial debut of Harry Wootliff, is having a preview at the Bargain Cinema on Saturday, and the documentary A Deal with the Universe is on its Q&A tour around the UK and is produced by the wonderful Lauren Dunn. So if you're based in Derby, Northampton, Edinburgh, Brighton or Somerset, keep your eyes peeled for that. And this week is the Flatpack Film Festival in Birmingham, where I will be heading at the weekend to interview future guests. And so to the present. This week I spoke to Catherine Slater, an associate producer at the Imaginarium, the production outfit founded by Andy Serkis and Jonathan Cavendish, and a BAFTA-nominated producer whose first short film, Wale, was shortlisted for the Oscars. It was brilliant to hear about Catherine's journey from assistant to associate producer, as well as how she balanced a full-time job with the full-time job of producing a short film. This is episode 16 of Best Girl Grip.
I actually did some work experience for a long time, as most people do, for, you know, expenses and things like that. So I count my first job in film probably as my first paid job, which was a two-day gig on a Derren Brown TV show where I was in the right place at the right time. My hairdresser put me in touch with a crew who was shooting in Yorkshire because they needed a runner with a car. So it's very daunting turning up in a tiny village in Yorkshire where you don't know anyone, you don't really know how to do the film industry. I've done like office running work in London, but basically you just got to dive in and do it, and that's what I've been told. And I was straight out of university. I went to St. Andrews University, did history, and came from there. So it was quite an intense first couple of days, but I absolutely loved it. And I think the team around me were really great, and the Derren Brown team, they'd done a lot of TV shoots, and they just needed someone who was working hard and able to do everything that was told to them. And then from there, I kind of just hopped to the odd bit of dailies on things like that before I got a job with a producer in York who was setting up a studio for a year. So that was kind of my first big job was for this producer for a year up in Yorkshire.
And did you know what running was? Were you like thinking, I want to get into production, and you knew that was the first role on the ladder, or how did you even discover that side of things?
Yeah, I did. While I was at uni, I did a lot of theatre stuff, extracurricular, and I went to London over one break, and I met up with a friend's uncle who said, yeah, have you thought about the film industry? I was like, well, I don't really know what skills I have for the film industry. He's like, well, you only learn if you give it a go. And I think the skills you've got as a theatre kind of producer, and I've done a lot of committee stuff at university, kind of that admin side. And so I got office running job in one of the Soho studios and kind of spent a week delivering mobile phones to producers across town and going to get people's tea and coffee. And it was amazing because I got a window into the industry. The people I was working for were generally really nice. Especially the ones around me, close to me, looking after me and shepherding me and teaching me things. And it was a company where I was able to go and go to events and things like that. They took me along with them. And I think that made a lot of difference in me thinking, okay, this is an industry I want to be in. No idea of what capacity, but I can figure that out as I go. And I think that first job I did for this producer in York, I didn't even know I was his PA for a long time. Like, I didn't know what my role was. I just knew that he needed someone to help him out. And eventually I decided I'm his PA. But it was a while because I was doing things like, you know, publicity on films. I was going in and dealing with the press and things like that. I had no training, but I think common sense, a level of common sense that you have to deal with things like that. And also, I think the people skills that I'd learned through my university degree and also just kind of all the theatre stuff I'd done. It's just transferable skills and realising where you can start. But I had no idea what I wanted to do then. And then after a year there, I applied for jobs down here as a PA. And I applied for this job at a company called the Imaginarium, which is Andy Serkis and Jonathan Cavendish's company. And I got that job as their PA, which was great. They'd never had a joint PA before. So I got to kind of work with them to create the role as best for the company and them.
I think when you say PA, a lot of people will envisage Anne Hathaway in maybe The Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah.
What are the kind of similarities, differences?
It's basically
what's the day-to-day like?
It is like that in the way that nothing is kind of predictable in your day. I mean, I'm very lucky, different from Devil Wears Prada, in that my bosses are really nice. But you don't go into any day knowing what is going to happen. And as an assistant, you also have to figure out what's a priority, how to deal with people. You're put under a lot of kind of, you're the first person anyone who wants to talk to them comes to. So you get an element of decision making on your own front about whether, you know, you take those people in to see these people, anyone who calls, any emails. And gradually, it all is about the relationship between you and your boss. I mean, I think you see that in Devil Wears Prada. You see that it's about that relationship and how that develops is all a personal thing. But I don't think that there is one way to be an assistant to someone. I think you just learn what that person needs and do it to the best of your ability. And I think it's quite all right to say, you know, maybe I'm not the best person to work with you as well and to go on to a different career. But at that point, it made sense for me. It really worked well. And I was learning everything I wanted to do about the film industry.
What's it been like working at Imaginarium?
It's been fantastic. The level of films that they've been kind of doing since I started there, I mean, it's changed quite dramatically. But as a company, you touch film, TV, video games, augmented reality, virtual reality, motion capture. Everything is encompassed in that company. And the excitement you can get and the people you meet on a day-to-day basis is really cool. So we do massive budget things. And then we also do tiny independent films, or we're developing like a theatre piece with someone. And what I really love and I take from it is the kind of the cross-platform nature of projects and the way you can bring people in from other industries and things like that, that the convergence of ideas. And that's what Andy is about as well, is he loves to bring in, you know, technologies and creative and get everyone talking and coming up with ideas. And the main ethos for the company is about great stories. And so to work somewhere that is passionate about telling great stories is amazing. The team is really cool. There's obviously a journey you go on with any company you work with, and you learn a lot of things, and it has ups and downs everywhere you go. But as an ethos, the new technology angle and the creative storytelling has been a really fun place to be and for me to grow while the company's grown. So I started there as the company was starting.
Right.
That's been really great. And now it's into a slightly different iteration where we've split into two sides. Mm-hmm. So we've got the production company side and the studios on the other side. And that's really good to have that relationship that's symbiotic, but also to be able to focus on our own areas.
Is that because it's more and more important now to kind of board the IP as early as possible? Is that kind of why the development into this, having a studio as well as production?
Yeah, I think it became very apparent that the two sides needed to have their own agendas and their own way of working, but were strong when they could work together, but didn't always need to.
And coming into that role at Imaginarium, were you looking to become a producer? And are you still, is that like, what was your kind of ambition?
No, I came in thinking, I've been told I'm a good PA. Let's roll with that for a while and see where it takes me. I went into my first job there as a very office-based PA. I didn't expect to be going out to movies. Andy had a PA when he went to America, who had a visa for there and things like that. So I didn't go with him. But the minute he did a production in the UK, I was his assistant on it. So I'm suddenly an on-set PA, which is a whole different ballgame.
Okay.
And I was too scared to talk on a radio for 2 weeks and had to learn a lot from the AD team because I kind of jumped onto that. And that's a very different thing as well for anyone, you know, listening about PA things. Is it depends what area you're in the industry, what kind of things you do, because being on set is a whole different thing. And the etiquette as well was something that absolutely freaked me out, because I was in a very strong position in Imaginarium where it was a small company. Everyone knew who I was and what my role was, whereas suddenly you're on set and people have no idea who you are. And so to go up to someone and tell them something on behalf of the director, they could turn around and be like, sorry, who are you? Why are you telling me this? Yeah. When you're, you know, just a young person there stood giving them instruction.
Yeah. Yeah, so can you talk a bit about that differentiation between being an office PA and what you're doing on set?
In essence, my role was whatever Andy wanted me to do at that point, which was fine, and I could always deliver that. Suddenly you have a whole host of people above you who you have to take instructions from and respect the wishes of, and everyone wants the director's time. And it's about understanding their personal needs as well. I mean, you have to decide who gets what priority in what order. I, in that instance, lent a lot on the brilliant first AD that we had to teach me and my producing boss, Jonathan. I mean, the two of them. Andy was so busy that, I mean, the idea of being a director's assistant is that you want to cover every base so that they don't have to worry.
Yeah.
And so I lent a lot on the first AD and the producer to teach me how to do that. And I think by the end of that process, I got there. But it was such a wonderful learning curve. And I think I was very blessed that it was a big studio movie. So there was the space to do that and the support network. Mm-hmm. But equally, you know, after that, I did an independent film and everything was very different. And you learn different skills. You learn different ways of working with different amounts of people, different budgets. But as a PA on set rather than in an office, obviously the hours. And people sometimes don't think about it, but PA is there before the director and after the director. So if the director decides to do a shoot day and then go to the edit after, the kind of hours you're doing are insane. But you just kind of go with it and you love it.
What about this role do you love the most?
I love getting to know people. And I love, and not just the people you're assisting, but you do get to know everybody that you come into contact with in a way that you can be friendly with them and get to ask them questions that you're in a very privileged position. There's been so many filmmakers, actors that my bosses have worked with that I've got access to through that, and that's been really amazing. And generally the difference in every day. I mean, I couldn't fathom a job personally where I go in and sit at a desk every day and do the same thing. Saying that, I do that sometimes, but I know that that's not what the next few weeks have for me. So I love the fact that every day there can be a new challenge. But after a while, I started itching and wanting to do different things myself. And they were very supportive of that as well.
So what's your role now?
So now I'm an associate producer at the company. And this went in tandem with just after we filmed our second Andy-directed, Jonathan-produced movie, Breathe at Imaginarium, where I got production executive credit on that one. There was a bit of a development period at work. We were doing post on Modi, and an actor, Ed Spalias, who's in Breathe, came to me and said, "Do you want to produce a short film?" And I was like, "I think so, yes." I mentioned it to him. That's why he came to me.
Yeah.
And he said, my friend has written and wants to direct this film. You have a read. And he sent it to me and fell in love with it. It was I go with my gut with films like that, and it was such a great feeling to read something. I was like, I'm really excited about this. I wish I could do it. I hope I can do it. Maybe I can do it. I won't know if I don't try. And then I thought, okay, but there's a few elements here I'm not entirely sure of. So my colleague at Imaginarium, Sophie Alexander, she was doing kind of more of the contracts and that kind of stuff, the budget stuff for a lot of the film we're doing. While I was out of the office on set, she was in the office doing those producing elements with our bosses. So I said to her, have a read of this, see what you think. And I went back to Ed and I said, look, Sophie and I would like to come on board. Let's talk about it. And we went from there. But that was all outside of work. So, I mean, I'll go into what happened with that short film after, but what that led to was our short film did well enough that at work now, I've risen up to the level of associate producer and I get creative input on things and I'm jumping on board of Andy's projects as his associate, which is really good.
And is that also like bringing in material and saying, you know, there's a cool writer, maybe we should work with them?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think the Imaginarium team are dependent on myself and Sophie to have our ears switched on to what's going on at a different level than they're listening to. Especially when it comes to, like, obviously social media and programs that we're watching that they wouldn't necessarily be watching. But conversations, networking, and all that kind of thing, is that there's access that young filmmakers, producers, women can go into. And I think they were also very acutely aware that they're all men. And I think that's a really good thing for them to recognize that as women, we will have different perspectives on things and can bring in different people. And so, yeah, part of our job is to bring in things for their slate, but also we're absolutely allowed to build our own slate of projects within the company of smaller films, because we're doing big things with companies like Netflix. Our next film is Animal Farm for Netflix. And when you've got big budget things, you also want to be thinking about that ground level. And that's what we can kind of work on and cover.
And what's the goal kind of to do producing for them?
Yeah. I mean, at the moment, I don't think that I'm following a set path of anyone. The goal is to be a producer. And Sophie and I, setting up a company now, we are looking actively for projects that fit what we want to do. It's all by our gut. It's all stories we love.
Yeah.
And how we get there, we'll figure out as we go, because it may be that Imaginarium gives us that platform to do it. Every project we meet someone about now, we will develop, and we have the ability to decide if it's going to be an Imaginarium project or if it's going to be one that we'll do outside of work. But at the same time, our careers are moving forward and we're meeting great people, and we're just basically collaborating with everyone in the best possible way to figure out where we go at the same time. I also had this weird thing where with how well our short film did, to call myself a producer was an interesting thing, because at work I wasn't there yet, I was an associate, whereas the film doing so well as a producer, you know, when somebody asks me what my job title is, I sometimes don't know how to answer, but you know, I'm now like, yes, I'm a producer.
And when did that point come that you're confident enough to say, okay, yeah, that's what I've done?
Yeah, I think when we started doing the festival circuit, so we shot, it's called Wale, and we shot it a couple of years ago and then finished it 2018, put it into festival circuit, and it started doing well in kind of smaller festivals. So it started winning a few awards. It won a few qualifying festivals. So obviously then we put it into the BAFTAs and the Oscars, and you're thinking, yeah, that's great. Our director was much more optimistic than I am. I think when it comes to filmmaking, I'm very optimistic, but when it comes to like awards things, I'm very realistic. And I think I had to hold myself back a lot. But then suddenly we get shortlisted for the Oscars, which is amazing. We got to the final 10 of that, and then we got nominated for a BAFTA. And I think at that point, people started listening up and they were like, hang on a minute. A lot more people started reaching out saying, can we watch it? That was amazing. And that was at the point where I think everyone around me was building me up to say, you're a producer, you can do this. But I think for a long time, people need some convincing and some support. But I think now we're at a point where we're like, okay, we've done really well. Look what you've done. Know your worth. You know, you're a talent and you've done this. Yes, it's a team effort. Yes, the director writer's job is amazing, but in all honesty, we all brought this project together, and the skills we got are, you know, we've developed them to a level where we've got nominated for a BAFTA. So
coming back to saying yes to the project,
yeah,
and obviously it's quite a big step, because I feel like the short film landscape is, you know, it can be quite an unknown. And did you know much about how to even go about making a short film? Like, what was your process like there?
What's interesting is dialing down. So the experience I'd had, not as a producer, but in the industry, was big budget movies. So at the time, Mowgli was The Jungle Book, and it was being developed with Warner Brothers. And at the time, we kind of got this project and thought, okay, we know how to do this, but we have to learn how to dial everything down in every element. But what was really interesting was the people we went out to for advice were the people we'd met on these projects, Sophie and I. And of course, they work in a certain sphere where you're saying a location price for this person. Oh yes, for Avengers we did this. And it's like, well, I don't really want to pay what Avengers paid for that cafe. And so you have to kind of realize where you need to take advice from the people, but where you need to kind of carve your own way. One of the small fights I've decided to wage at one point in my career will be where locations and councils charge you the same for a place regardless of what your film is, you know. And I find it very off-putting for filmmakers who don't have any money behind them. If they were to call a council, not all councils like this, if they were to call a council and they were like, yes, it's £700 a day to film it, and you know, you don't have that kind of money. And I feel like that's really sad, and I'd like to kind of look into that further and combat it at some point when I have the power to. But the dialing down thing was certainly something we had to learn very quickly. But in all honesty, there's no way to learn but to do it. And if you have a deadline, if you have to make a film, and we had, Barnaby doesn't live in the UK, our director, so we had a very specific deadline to get stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you learn how to make anything is to just do it in a timeline.
And did you have funding from the get-go, or were you looking for funding?
No, we crowdfunded, actually, for half the budget, and then we had equity investors for the other half. It was amazing. I mean, the four of us who made the film, Barnaby, Ed, Sophie and myself, reached out to family and friends. And I think because the four of us had proven ourselves to family and friends as creatives and as hardworking individuals, I think they were, you know, not surprisingly to them, but surprisingly to us, jumping on board with supporting us on whatever we were doing. And it was amazing to have that level. And then we had these equity investors that we basically, you know, you just go out and hustle and get people to give you, you know, we got three people for £5,000 each that just were like, and they'll give the money to support us as filmmakers, which is incredible. The next time we do it, we don't want to crowdfund. Sophie and I, we loved that process and we loved the fact that everyone felt so invested. And a lot of our family and friends I've said this to and they're like, no, but we want to. I'm like, I know, but I felt such an onus, you know. I believed in the project, I believed in Barnaby, but having your family and friends' money on the line for a project like that is quite scary because you never know what people are going to do in theatres and audiences or awards. You never know if it's going to get anywhere and you just would end up feeling really guilty. But it's an amazing way to do your first one if you have that support network.
Yeah, completely. And what's been the process like of showing it to people? How's that been?
Some of the best moments we've had with this film have been sitting in audience screenings and watching their reactions and the tenseness in the room. The most amazing screening we had was at Bounce Cinemas.
Yeah, Matthew.
Yeah, and I think the amazing thing about Bounce is that they don't announce what they're showing beforehand, yet they still have this absolutely chocker room full of people. And Matthew's done an incredible job, and it really was really inspiring to go there. But to watch the audience watch our film in that room was quite something, because the BAFTA puts it on in Curzon and it has this run, but the Curzon audience is very different from the Bounce audience, and the demographic in those rooms is amazing. And just to hear the vocalizations was quite something. It's a, for those who haven't watched it, it's a short, tense, 20-minute thriller, and there's quite a few turning points where you're questioning everything about what the character does. So it's quite a fun movie to watch with a room full of people.
Yeah. And can people see it at home? Is it still doing its kind of like BAFTA run?
At the moment, it's finished on Curzon now as part of the BAFTA run, but at the moment we've got a distributor who is doing sales for us. So right now we are kind of doing all those deals and perhaps those things. So soon, hopefully.
And did that come off the back of the nomination?
It came off the back of the Oscar nomination, very interestingly. Shortlist. Very interestingly, we got a few distributors reach out to us who kind of, I guess they do that for a lot of the shortlist films, but they really fell in love with our story and thought it could travel. And it's a very kind of topical story, but also it's got a really great narrative loop. So as a tale for people to watch, it can sell really well as a film, which is quite rare for short films as well. Like you said, short film is a very different kettle of fish, and you don't normally expect to make a short film for it to be sold anywhere. But I think that industry is opening up now, and I think, you know, people are tuning into them on airplanes, but, you know, Amazon or Netflix is opening up to that thing, but HBO's showing a lot of shorts, and then you've got lots of smaller things like Shorts of the Week and things like that who promote things. So hopefully that there's an arena to show shorts, because it's a really great way of starting out. People are eager for stories in any format, so if you can get to audiences, if you can promote your film in a way that they'll watch it, they'll be there. They'll be eager.
When you were kind of producing and gearing up to go through this process, did you have someone, maybe aside from Sophie, that you felt like you could go to ask questions, someone at Imaginarium or outside of Imaginarium?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our team at Imaginarium were invaluable. When the script first came in, we went to our development team at Imaginarium and spoke to them about it. We've got a great team there, Will Tennant and Elisa, who we've lent on a lot in terms of advice. And also not just specific script notes, but the whole development process, I think, was the area that I speak for myself, but I was not very au fait with before we did the short film. I'd had a lot of production experience by then, but I hadn't had much development. So in terms of looking at script and how to change it, how to make it better, how to improve it, how to not take away from the director's vision, that was something that was really great to lean on the Imaginarium development team with. And equally, any department we came across, you know, we needed help with, we had these wonderful people from all the films we both worked on. Sophie also worked on different Imaginarium films. So we had a huge cross-reference of freelancers that weren't just Imaginarium staff as well, that we could go to and ask things to. And then amazing co-producers our bosses have worked with. But also, like, we were really nervous to go to our direct bosses for a long time. And then there were moments where we were like, okay, here's a moment where we can ask them a question and we really want their answer. We really want to know what they think. You know, they were so open to listening and watching cuts and giving advice. It's really nice to be able to lean on everyone in the industry. And I think the main thing I learned is that collaboration, is to know to ask people what you think, because everyone does it at every level.
And as a producer, what kind of stories are you looking to tell? It's quite difficult.
A lot of people come to us with different projects and say, oh, is that not your thing? But in all honesty, I don't think there is one genre. You worry, I think directors worry to be put into one area, and they don't want to, if they do a horror movie, they'll think they'll be a horror director forever. I think with producers, you have a little more freedom to do different projects. But above all, we just want to make stories that touch people emotionally, and that when we read the script in our gut, we get a weight where we're like, okay, that's really moving in some way. It's really powerful, but I don't think there is one kind of story that we want to tell. I personally read a lot more kind of thrillers and dramas and things like that.
What would you say has been like the biggest learning curve of your career?
I think knowing when to take a seat back and listen, I think was something that I definitely took some time to learn. I think when you first come into the industry, you are all guns blazing in order to prove yourself. And I think one of the best skills you can learn is when to listen to people, and also when to choose not to talk. It's like choose your battles, but when it doesn't remove your power in any way. And it doesn't mean you should sit in a room full of people and never say a word because you don't feel like you can. But it's almost more powerful to know that you don't need to add in a sentence in every room you go to in every meeting. And sometimes it is just somebody else's time to get their point of view across and you to listen.
And on the flip side, have you ever felt not listened to?
Oh, all the time. Yeah. I think the thing with this industry is that there are always going to be rooms of people where you feel like you're not listened to, or they will very... There's a lot of two-facedness, especially I've found in the US, because I've done some trips there, and some people, not the ones working on our projects, thankfully, but I've met some people at events and things like that who will say one thing to you one minute and something else to someone the next, and they don't realize how much you find out. But equally, I think that they will say, how are you, what are you up to, and then as you answer, they don't listen. And I think that happens quite regularly, is the game playing in this industry. But I think the best thing you can do, the people I've learned the most from, are the ones that have gotten past that or never been that, and don't want to hang out with those people and don't want to work with those people. And as long as you can kind of trust your gut and say, hang on a minute, I know you've got an amazing project and I'd love to work with you, but I don't like your attitude towards people. That's a really good way of doing things. And now I look for people that talk to everyone I work with in the right way. So it's not just about how they talk to me, but it's how they talk to that person over there. It's how they talk to we have an intern working with us who comes in and makes someone a cup of tea. I'll notice whether that someone says thank you and things like that. And that will affect my decision to work with them.
Coming back to being an associate producer and also learning to kind of call yourself a producer, at what point did you sort of like trust your instinct with like projects or having like creative notes on something? Because I often feel like that's something you can't necessarily learn. Like that's your own opinion and subjection. And
yeah.
So what was that kind of process?
That was a long process for me. I think for the first time we got the Wale script in and we read it, Sophie and I had these notes we weren't sure about. We went to some people and they had notes. And then you realise that the stuff you pick up on in the script is actually what other people are picking up on. There were some really expert notes that we got told, like, and we were like, oh my goodness, you're so right. But, I mean, the script was in great shape when we got it. So it was tough to say, oh, I don't know what I'd say about this, because you realise that there's so much there already that you don't need to. I think for me, the edit process on Breathe was one of the first times I felt confident in my gut and my opinion, because Andy would bounce ideas to me when I'd just come to ask him something for his diary. And I'd give my opinion, and then a day later I'd see it in the cut. And to have that effect on, and it was, you know, a couple of very minor moments, and a lot more people gave a lot more opinions to that. But to see anything I suggested actually making it into a film that was going to be actually in a cinema was quite amazing. And I started slowly to trust myself. And then I think also when the team around you listen to your input on any project, when you get consulted on anything in a meeting, because you're young, because you're a woman, because you're just not the person that's been in the last meeting and you're a fresh look, you start gaining confidence slowly. And luckily for me, that happens more and more.
What's a film that you might have seen recently or not so recently that you think is undervalued?
I'm usually rubbish at knowing who's making what, and I need to make it more of a priority to kind of learn the directors behind the films I'm watching. But the film Leave No Trace by Deborah Granik had a big effect on me in a way. I think it was beautiful because I discovered it on Hidden Gems on an airline. And then I thought, this isn't a film I should watch on an airline. Mm. So I actually went and watched it outside the airline. So I kind of used that as a source. Yeah. I noted down all the films in the Hidden Gems section and went home after. But I think that the beautiful thing about having a female director, and especially in something like that, but also I recognized it in Fleabag recently and things like that, is the way they portray men is, like, if men are directing, but I'm really generalizing here, and this might not be the case, but if men are directing women, they might be scared to look at the layers of, you know, nothing's ever black or white, there's gray. Whereas I think women tend to not be scared about portraying the grey areas of people and the fact that you don't need to be good or bad. And I think what Deborah Granik does in Leave No Trace is that really complicated character she has with a war vet who, you know, he's not good, he's not bad. And to add that addition of how he brings up a child and the decisions he makes as a person.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that, you know, she's chosen to do that and that it's not a woman, you know, character and how they're raising a child. It's a really interesting way in that I wonder how that would have been done if it was directed by a man. And also, I really like Dumplin'. I think that's just been a really good feel-good movie recently. And I watched that with my whole family, and it's one of those films that just, it harks back to those really good feel-good films that you struggle to see a lot of now, that I just thought the balance of tone and story was just beautifully done, and it was really fun to watch.
And who is someone, a woman that you've worked with in the industry that you want to spotlight or give a shout out to?
I think a lot of the women on Wale, my co-producer Sophie, she's amazing, and I honestly, the teamwork you have, I mean, the whole industry for me is only survivable if you find your people, and I've definitely found my person there, Sophie, who I want to work with for a long time. Our production designer, Lily Leah Abraham, she's quite an amazing force. And she is someone who you can say, look, I've got this amount of money, this tiny amount of money, make it work. And she's like, I'll do it. I will find a way. And what she gets on screen is absolutely mesmerizing. I actually met her. She was a prop hand on Mowgli. And it was amazing to kind of find women who I've worked with on these big films and in these capacities. And the first people I went to kind of crew up Wale were all kind of these amazing women I'd met on the films I've worked on. And you want to rise them up. I mean, and there were some amazing guys on that film too. But particularly, I think Sophie and Lily for that film were inspirations to me every day when I was going to set.
Thank you to Catherine for coming on the pod. Thank you for listening. And here's some advance gratitude for rating, reviewing, or recommending the podcast to literally anyone you know. I've got some really very cool guests lined up for you who do some really very cool things in the film industry, such as costume designing, music supervising, and cinematography. So for the love of conversation, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Acast to get first dibs on that.